this particular project, again, we are planning to have implementation at the new holistic interface unit in Victoria by the end of the following financial year. Again, it's one of the projects that I said is a multi-year project in terms of our target for this year. We are on track with the implementation. The closed circuit television, we did publish a tender. Unfortunately, we had to recall the tender because we need to review the specification. The tender was published through FINTA. We have asked that it be recalled so that we can review the specification and ensure that it's in line with our other bigger projects, such as the World project. Secure email technologies, we are very much in line again with this one. We are going to, by the end of the financial year, we have deployed 540 PCs and scanners and printers. These are some of the additional projects that we just wanted to report on, because there is a lot of other work that has come about because of the importance of the project. Offenders register, which is really part of the CRIM system, is almost 30% complete, and I can report that it has built up probably almost 50% of the way. Capacity expansion of the criminal record centers, that has been done. The procurement has been completed. The rollout has to the 92 local criminal record centers. At that time, it had not started, but we have begun the process now. The enhanced firearms register system, the ease of mission functionality, that is the application of for firearm licenses online, has been completed. Implementation and for ammunition and manufacturers had not started at that time. We believe that all the identification of the manufacturers and the prioritization has been done. So we believe that, again, we will meet our target by the financial year. Veterinary service system. Again, that is one system that has been developed on the current PAS system. So the development has been completed and the site visits done. Urban beta testing are being done right now. We hope that by the end of September we will have finished the testing. So again, we are quite far down the line with progress on this one. Let the Chair and honorable members complete our presentation.
Thank you very much for the speaker and presenter. We are going to allow members to ask questions directed to the presentation. Any questions?
An indication from you whether we get the second round of questions as well. Okay. Might I just say that my general feeling from what we've heard is not necessarily an improvement in my satisfaction or feeling a bit more comfortable about what's happening. You get the idea that such is buying and buying and buying and buying, and it's lying something. It's not all about. And your own data is indicating that as well. And this is incomplete in terms of fine, and that is why we told you that the detectors of Stellenbosch didn't have computers. It's bought, and the data gets rolled out. That's the problem. And this is indicating it yet again that Dubai is not running out. And there are specific programs that one needs to refer to. But that's just a general comment. I will come to those questions. In terms of CETA, there are two specific questions that I want to ask CETA. Can I just say also, there is an aid that's not being signed yet. It's just absolutely unacceptable. I mean, I hear and I listen and I. The problem is that this wasn't a reoccurring situation between SAPS and CETA. One would still be a bit more lenient in this regard. But there's been years that it's never been signed. And we are 6 months into the financial year already. CETA, two questions specifically. The one is regarding the contractors that work for SAPS. The CETA contractors at SAPS, not CETA's permanent staff, CETA contract staff. It's my understanding that as part of your annual increases every year, from SAPS side as well, there's also an increase made for, and I also understand that these contractors are paid, they are billable hours to CETA, so they are a CETA income. But yet, every year we've got reports of tension between the contractors and CETA. In terms of contracts not being renewed on time, so that people go through a period where they don't know whether they actually have work. Second thing is that SAS in the increases also makes provision for an increase in the salary or the contract increase of that individual involved. Now, we get different figures, we hear between 7% and 8%, yet the contractor themselves are only getting 4% of that increase. 4.1%, I think, is what you pronounced. Now, the question comes to mind, why is CETA taking what was aimed at increases for the contractor into their own pockets? These people are, as far as I understand, almost one of your biggest income is from your contractors itself as well. That's the one thing. The second thing is, I need more information, Jefferson, but I know you're going to ask many questions about that as well. But it is my understanding that it goes back also to SAPS. You hear we've issued a tender, but now we've cancelled the reward of the tender. We no longer have it. Now, with our experience, sorry to say, SAPS, of your supply chain management, it immediately raises questions further up that the wrong person got the tender. And therefore, we want to reissue certain requirements. We want to write the requirements so that the right person gets the thing. That's unfortunately, with your record in terms of supply chain management, that's where how I look at it. Let me speak for myself about this. SDR Lab, which was the predecessor to PKEN, it was my understanding that all those people who were at CETA that were going to or was part of the SDR Lab program resigned from CETA and is now on the PKEN team for SAPS. Now, I want an explanation from both organizations what happened here. First of all, how can CETA allow that they lose that knowledge? On the one hand, but SAPS also need to explain to us some issues here, Jefferson, because something, I want to leave it at that in terms of that, because I know you've got more specific questions around this issue. The last question specifically for CETA is in terms of your web design team. The CEO looks at me very frowning. So we've got a responsibility to ask you these questions. It's my understanding that you have 7 project managers on that team and only 1 technical person. And that last year alone, you lose 13,000 billable hours in that team. Can we get an explanation of what is happening there? Jenny Forsat, it's not good enough to tell us that you've cancelled contracts. We need reasons why. We want to know why have you cancelled contracts. And I've explained why I think it's necessary that you explain to us why you cancelled contracts. You know, if you look at the e-docket system, I see you don't call it that in your presentation, but it is the e-docket system as we know it. You say that you're going to do 20 stations by the end of this financial year. Let's hope so, because we've been to some of the stations that they're supposedly there yet, and I can tell you that there are some certain serious questions around the implementation of the system itself as well. And then you're going to do 40-40-40. It's going to take you half of 57, 28 years, more or less, to implement it with all of these stations. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. By the time you implement it, in the fourth year there will be an upgraded system that will be better. You won't need that system anymore. I don't have to tell you that. You're supposed to know IT better than we do. Surely this can't be right. And the way it's implemented at the stations that we've been to, and I'll give you examples of stations. Pretoria Central Station. Right next door to you, your head office. Where the scanner is standing on one floor. The printer is on another floor. The computer is on a different floor. Yeah. When we were at Pretoria Central Police Station, we saw that with our own eyes. That is the situation. When you ask them, how are you going to do this? There's no plan. There's no plan to say, oh, they show us a space. Now we plan to bring the scanner here, we plan to bring the printer here, but there's no table, there are no cables, there are no electric points, there's nothing in that room. In the meantime, we all know what happens with equipment that are being used at other points for purposes that it's not supposed to be used for. It's broken, etc., etc. And if you believe such, another example, at least there's a system, at least there's an operational can see a line functioning. That's a really basic thing, a logical thing that we, and I'm definitely not an IT specialist, I can use my iPad and that's about it. A really basic thing, quality control, that's not exist. We went there, very impressed, it's the first time that we actually saw an e-docket system, so we asked him, show us one. Show us a docket that you have now scanned in. Proudly, they went into the program to show us the docket. Hello? There were no quality control. So what happened? Nobody could treat with a concert docket. Because when the statement was taken down in the charge office or in the community service center, we didn't use a black pen. We used a light blue pen. Nobody's doing quality control right from the community service center to where the actual scanning takes place to say, even if before you start scanning, check, will this scan? No, it won't scan. Let's do something about it. But even before then, issue the people in the charge center with the right things. But that has taken 10 minutes, because that's what they say on average the file takes to scan, 10 to 15 minutes to scan, and it's now on the system. And who knows how many more of those there are. And again, it takes members of parliament who've got no IT knowledge to tell them that, guys, don't you think you should think about having quality control in this process? And none of us, I think, sitting here has any IT experience. So, in my mind, Chairperson, it comes back to the fact that we are providing SAPs A with the funding. We're providing them with the tools of the trade. The minister that we have currently is adamant, and we agree and we support him in this, that we need to modernize our police service. It's almost like you don't know what to do with what you've got. I'm not impressed by the progress report we've been receiving. The APA system, Jefferson, the fingerprint system, nowhere. We've passed legislation allowing SAPs access to the databases of Home Affairs, database of correctional services, databases of national transport. I don't even see a program registered. In terms of how you're going to make a system talk to one another, how you're going to cooperate in this process. Nothing there. And see, that starts with management. It starts with the people who are getting the salaries to do exactly that. Explanation, please, Jefferson, why the detention register, the detention contract was cancelled? Why the CCTV contract was cancelled? I've got more, but I'll stop there, Chair. I'll keep some for the second round.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll take this opportunity also to appreciate the presentation that we have received this morning. I've got a question that the first one I need to be addressed by the CTAR with regards to the pricing. They indicated that the system actually that they're actually using in their SAPs. In some cases, the SAPs actually or other departments were complaining that the system is so expensive, and now they have actually decided to reduce the prices. So I just want to find out why, in the first place, did they make that price to be high, and what caused them now to make it to lower it. Was the intention? Why was it not lower so that the department could afford to use the system? And my second other question is with regard to the subs. In terms of the tools that they have actually purchased for technology, they are saying that those tools, even if they have purchased, but they still need officials to go to training. So and then until they are well trained, it means they can't fully utilize those tools. And also when I see on the slide here on technology management, the fingerprint exhibit image, they've got some tools, but it's actually start. I think they will start implementing that in 2012. So my question is now, what is happening now? Because there was budget that was actually given to them to actually make sure that they are effective in utilizing those resources. And another one is with regards to the 20 police stations that they actually identified as a priority police stations in terms of building green employment system sets. So I'm actually not clear where actually these police stations are and how did they actually select those police stations, because we've got so many police stations. So I just want to know exactly where are they and actually those police stations are actually covering the vast of our country, because it is not only centered somewhere, and somewhere in the outskirts we don't have one. So I just need that information so that the resources and the knowledge that is there in the country could be shared across the country. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks very much to Mr. Zapp's presentations. I'd like to start with Zapp's. During the presentation, there was downloaded the annual performance plan. I've gone through the annual performance plan. I've browsed through it. I've also managed to get a hard copy behind me. And I can't find the things you're talking about in the annual performance plan. Because during the presentation, the presenter kept on saying, this is as per the annual performance plan, or this is as per the, it's in line with the annual performance plan. Now, maybe I haven't read, I can't read this properly. I'm going to ask, and I really would appreciate, if we could be given exactly what page referring to the annual performance plan, because I can't find it. I've checked with the committee researcher, and she confirms as well that this stuff is not in the annual performance plan. Unless there's been a change to the annual performance plan. But I remember when we dealt with the annual performance plan, we actually raised the fact, our concern, that there were no targets there, there were no numbers, no nothing that we could actually measure on. So that's a concern I have. Because I cannot say whether what you're saying is correct or not, because I don't have that information. So that's the first thing. Just the second thing in terms of the presentation from SAPS. I mean, I'm very concerned about the number of the areas where the presenter was saying, which a person, that there's been progress made, and you look and it says 1% or 2%. Etc. So I am a little bit concerned, and I think again we are at a disadvantage here because we don't have the information that you have, and that's what I've raised just now about the end of performance plan. There's a pilot project in Cullinan, I understand, the Cullinan police station, which is linked up with the courts, etc. It's an old pilot project, and I was going through this to check where that pilot project is actually listed, and I don't find it listed. Would you perhaps just tell us under which program that pilot project is? Because I haven't been able to identify it here. I'd like to get an understanding as to what the progress is with that pilot project and how close are we to rolling that out in other pilot centers. Then I want to just come to CETA. And I've really got one particular question that I want to raise at this stage. Well, in fact, let me raise two things. The first thing is that one has often heard that there are delays in the issuing of tenders, etc. And that SAPS submits the requirements, and then it takes forever for these tenders to go out. And I'd like to get an understanding as to, you know, what tenders are outstanding, and where we are in terms of that. But a little while ago, I heard of a particular tender, I think it's called a tender, that relates to the acquisition of IT skills. And from what I understood, it was expiring in May and hadn't been reissued. I've gone onto the CETA website, go and check for myself. And I've actually found it on the CETA website here, contact 569. It's on the CETA website. And it says that this contract will not continue beyond its expiry date on the 31st of May, 2011. It's a contract that relates to the acquisition of IT skills. I believe it allows departments to obtain or insource IT professionals. I'd love to get an understanding as to what is the implication of that contract not being continued, renewed, whatever the correct term is, on SAPS? Maybe CETA can answer, but I'd like to hear from SAPS as well. What is the implication? The understanding I've had is it has major implications.
Let me also take the opportunity to thank both presentations. My question is directed to SACS and Forensic Science Service. When I was listening to you, you were talking about problems of acquiring cars. That's, to me, because I chose that. There's not enough planning. But I think we must have a way of resolving the acquiring skills to drive the process. Please, if you can answer, what plans do you have to resolve this matter? My colleagues have asked the same question, but I am saying we have seen in the past that the equitable share skewed towards the urban areas of the county most of the time. The concern to me, when are we decentralizing this to the poor rural areas? The matter of emphasis here. It's true that those 20 numbers that was mentioned, we need to know, because from my experience, I learned Gauteng, so everybody goes to Gauteng for services, pension.
Thank you, Chair. Look, the fact that I feel that entities fall so far behind in research is a huge concern for me. All the units in the country, one would imagine this was the one that would be driving innovation in relation to technology, and I feel that the lack of stress on innovation, the fact that they've only now approved just 2% of the budget for research, is quite extraordinary to me. In technology, if one gets behind, drops behind, which I feel they've done, because they come here year after year after year. It's not a new unit. This is a similar presentation to the one we've had year after year after year. And to find that they're literally doing nothing when it comes to research and innovation is of huge concern. It means we're going to be reliant on international imports in relation to technology for many years to come. And frankly, technology-wise, I think it's quite possible that they've missed the boat completely. Because if you get behind, as Honourable Amelie said a moment ago, in a few years, what you've already put in is already out of date. So that's a huge concern for me, that so little emphasis has been put on forward thinking and forward planning in relation to technological innovation. I also would like to know, just give me an update on what's happened to, I believe they were talking, were they the MorphoTouch machines, those little portable fingerprint reading machinery? It was a program that was launched with great fanfare. I'd like to know how much money was spent on it, and we've been to station after station after station, and I've yet to see one. They were going to be put into every tax vehicle so that there was instant access to who the person was, were they dodging court appearance dates, etc., and it's just disappeared. I mean, has the entire project collapsed, and what did it cost us? It seemed at the time to be quite innovative and it worked. Certainly I put my finger in one and it popped up with my name immediately. So it was linked, it worked, and it's evaporated. So I'd like to know what's happening there. And I think the same concern that Honourable Laketo just voiced, the fact that you say now they're going to put these fingerprint enrollment systems at 20 police stations, 0% complete. But, one looks through the documentation and And again, the Eastern Cape is totally left out of the mix. You know, you have certain stations linked up already with e-dockets, and where's the Eastern Cape? As usual, the Cinderella province, nothing. I know where we've been there. I mean, to the Eastern Cape, a fax machine is the height of technology. I mean, most of the stations we went to were not linked to anything. Their PCs are actually just electric typewriters. So it's a huge concern that, again, no development seems to be happening in relation to technology in that particular province. I can't believe that year after year after year, we can come back here and just find out that once again we have a single province that's left out of the mix. Thank you.
Jefferson, thank you very much. Let me follow my fellow members by congratulating the presenters, both of them. But I've got a disadvantage of something here, which I want to be educated. As a layman and as a rural person, I would be very glad to be educated in this matter. One, we talk about e-government, it is a government-to-government communication. But when you go to SAP's presentation, you talk about accident reporting, where citizens can report a motor vehicle accidents. That is later. But when you go to SAPS, you don't get that information. And I don't understand what is really going on now in between. I want to be educated. And secondly, when we say that there is a progress, then you put a 0% complete. What does it mean, really? I may be stupid. I really want to be educated. If it says completed and then you put a 0% complete, what does it mean? Does it mean that it's complete and it's no more, the project is finished and it's 100% or it's 0%? What does it mean, really? And lastly, Chairperson, I think one of the members, it's Mr. Schumann who said, we are disadvantaged somewhere, somehow, because there is a, the presenter says that some of the things is coming from the view that we're supposed to understand and know about it. But when we go back and try to find out what we are talking about, what the presenter is saying to us, and trying to get the understanding of what we are trying to grasp. We seem to be in between now. Why I'm saying this is because when you're referring to a document, and you're referring to that document, and you don't quote a document, and you don't quote a page of the document that you are quoting on, you left the rural person like myself in between. It doesn't know which document you are referring to, which page you are referring to, or what paragraph you are referring to. And I don't know that this statement exists or not. That's why I'm saying I'm really, you can see that these are questions, but I'm lamenting that I want to be educated here, because I'm not a technology person. I may be a stupid person, but I really know how to read and write. I just want to know what's going on. Thank you very much.
No, thank you, Ben. Thank you very much, Reverend. Thank you, Ed, and for sharing the information. And here
year, I think you've given us up to about 22, if not more, projects. Some we need are in this list, but others are not. And for us, it talks to the budget. And therefore, we will probably want to know as to what is the budget for each project. And to date, how much have you spent on each project? And we also we want to know as to how would each project improve service delivery. I'm saying this because maybe when you check this page, if you need to click on the page, you have up to 16, and some of the projects that are here are no longer in the service. They're not. I was actually checking and going through. In the document, you are referring to the 2011-12. In fact, 2011, 12, 2015, 16 strategic plan, we don't have that. What we have is 2010, 14 strategic plan. So we don't know as to which document are you referring to, and then there's something that you've tabled before Parliament, and we are not aware as the Procurement Committee, because when we met the department at the beginning of the year, you did not have a reviewed strategic plan. And we depended on the annual performance plan, which you then reviewed and sent back to us later on. Now we don't know which plan I'm referring to, with all these things, talking to which budget, whether this year's budget or another budget which you're not aware of. In the meeting of the 19th of April this year, General Shabalala informed the Portfolio Committee on Police that PKEL is a sweetheart brain child. He said that because sweetheart was actually saying PKEL is not, they are not aware of that. He said it is sweetheart brain child. We then asked, and Peter responded to the Portfolio Committee by saying we need to go back and check for more information, and we respond in writing, and indeed they did. It's a longer response, however, I think it is important for me to go to this paragraph that says the implication of this is that the Peter contract is not a Peter contract, as asserted by staff during the Portfolio Committee meeting of 19 April 2011. What this means is that staff misled the Portfolio Committee. CETA did not refuse any tasking from staff to draft the contract between staff and UNICEF Africa. CETA was merely the facilitator to a process by which staff made a final award and then entered into a contract with the unique supplier. Further, CETA has on many occasions inquired about the scope of the PKEL project contract in order to ascertain how we could give input and also to ascertain the impact of this project on existing subsystems. In all cases, the response has indicated that such would only require our participation once the project has kicked off. To date, there has been no invitation from SAP in this regard. The total value of this contract was 262 million, and the recommendation committee members that adjudicated on the award of the tender were as follows. Then we give them the list. We think we need explanation. And I would also want to say, with regards to the PKEL contract, am I wrong if I'm saying PKEL is M with a new name, the difference in the added items. Which are additional items that have absolutely nothing to do with the check and trace elements of information technology. What is PICAM? And the information that we have about PICAM is that it's supposed to have four phases. One, the PICAM, which is property control and equipment management. The second phase would be e-docket system. The third phase would be integration of cards. And fourth phase is maintenance. What are you in terms of implementation of PICAM? Where did you get the budget for PICAM in the first place? And who is providing or provided they could request for the software? What is the difference between ENS and PICAM? Why should we, therefore, as a portfolio committee, request that this project, this contract should be investigated? Taking into account the fact that in one of our meetings, General Shabalala said the contractor got an unfair advantage, quote, why should this contract not be investigated? What is, are there any implications between what PICAM is supposed to do and what CETA is expected to do? What is the total cost of PICAM? I think some of the questions that I have already been asked by members. Time now is 10:11. Can we, because I see she has come, can we just take 15 minutes break for tea? And then when we come back later and start, we then respond to our questions.
Thank you.
yes, I love that. So that's, and the department and Twitter respond, they can then from a telephone start, they follow up questions but not to ask the questions. Can I just go through the capitalization? One of the slides, I'm not sure whether it's the slide number 16 or any other slide, but it is on role of staff with regards to IMS. The question is, how does IMS project relate to IMF, I understand it has an asset management component. Yes, PK is also an asset management. How are you doing it? There is a complication. Also in that slide, we have said in 2005 that indicated that there will be the results that can roll out IMF.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you, I'm sorry, in your specific information, I'm sorry, why they volunteered to be the last department that it be rolled out. Two further questions I have. The one is steps in terms of the ring fence fund. Can we get a breakdown of what is happening to the ring fence fund funding in terms of specifically the criminal justice arena? And where do we stand with that? How much money has been spent? And how much of it is available? And what are we getting for that money? And then I've got a question that I don't know whether SAPS or CTAS got to answer, and they can decide for themselves, I will know best. The RIMAS system. RIMAS. RIMAS system. If I understand correctly, that system deals with VIP traveling, diaries, flight details. It deals with accommodation. And if I understand correctly, it is a system that is supposed to be used by the VIP protection unit. Now, my understanding is that the system has been converted, but not implemented. And after FIFA World Cup, it was not implemented, it was said due to the FIFA World Cup. Now, in my mind, this is a very serious issue. We all know what the consequences of VIP security is, we know what it costs the country, etc. It was not implemented, and the developer after the FIFA World Cup was fired as well. I also understand that there's currently no support, no technical support for the RIMAS system. And that apparently nobody knows where the source code of the system is. This is a top secret system. We're not abating the protection of information law this afternoon, so I can. It's a top secret system. Diane, even if we were debating it, I would be allowed to ask this question. It deals, if I'm correct, it deals with VIPs, micro-president, cabinet, etc., diaries, their appointments, their travel routes, accommodation, etc. How is it possible that a system like that can just be stopped? Who took the decision to stop the system? Is it a vacuum that is left? Do we have something in place? Why was it stopped? What was the reason to stop? In other words, are we at this stage, can we be secure? No, therapies or in the lack of the system, actually secure. I think, gee, those were the two that I still need to ask. Thank you.
Consultancy, the question I'm asking. Who's providing that
for CETA and for the police. And I noticed that there is a program, including the program of going into tender process. Now, I want to just be assured that those consultancies that are going to be helping, whether CETA outside in terms of specs or what need to be put in, are somehow not necessarily going to be further down the road. There is a proper mechanism that is going to weed that out. That specs does not influence the outcome of the tender. So that's why I would have the interest to know the relationship of those that are going to be the technical people that are giving technical assistance to both in terms of this project. And then the second one that is probably related is the expenditure question. I think that just in a follow-up, but when I was reading the presentation, the progress here, it wasn't very clear to me in terms of the what I've seen the year, the most year that is critical is 2012, is the year that seems to be the implementation. That are we beginning to see under expenditure moving forward with the project itself that may require the kind of rollover moving forward in terms of that particular expenditure on the project. Then the last question really is when I was reading the presentation, it wasn't clear to me in terms of the self-presentation whether the pilot or what they call certain police, critical police station, 20 or 40 of them, the arriving at those, what is the mechanism? Is there only 20 or is it 40, is it a repetition of the pilot? And I didn't see the pilot projection that over time, that this is when we're going to completely this project in terms of all the station, except that 20 here, 40 there, 20 here, 40 there. So I wasn't quite clear about the expenditure, the money that is budgeted for this work, and the process that we get into that particular in terms of what you're going to do after that point. Thanks, Chair.
My recurring favorite question. When is SAPS becoming .gov.za? Why is SAPS email still .org.za?
Thank you very much, Member. The director previously employed at SAPS will give an answer next day of school. Date of joining is 23 July 2001. 9 days up until now. Contract extension 10 times. Date of joining 19 February 2001. More than 10 years, contract extension 10 times, 06 May 28 3 times, whatever, 01 October 2000 10 times. I can imagine that already there's another one coming, which is supposed to probably be providing the same lane. Yet it is the same contractor who put up the GSP. I mean, what is this? Now coming with something else. Then people who come off after they say they come back and they are contracted.
Thank you very much, ma'am. I will be dealing with some of the overall questions which impact on the turnaround strategy, and my colleague, the CEO, Ms. Mjoli, who is in charge of the procurement, will talk about the tender questions, and then the COO will talk about some of the other issues, for example, the web design, etc. Madam Chair and Honourable Members, the question that's been asked about CPIP staff complement, the questions that you raised about contractors, the issues raised by the member about are we envisioning a situation that CPIP will have all the in-house skills and won't rely on contractors, as well as the question raised by the member at the back about innovation and prices. I think that those issues were exactly part of the fundamental reasons why we required a turnaround strategy. If one look at CIPA's staff complement, at the moment we at about 3,500 full-time staff, and about if you add labour brokers and contract staff, it goes up to just over 4,000. Now, one of the things that we as we developed our strategy,
yeah,
3,500, and with contract staff, it's just over 4,000. Now, if one look at the situation, and I think that you're correct, you have some of the contractors that's been on contract for over 10 years, as long as the agency's been in existence. One of the things that we've therefore done as we developed our turnaround strategy was to say that where should the agency be going to in the next 5 years? What is the kind of vision that was envisaged when the Presidential Review Commission said we need a central information technology agency, look at issues of convergence, look at issues of economies of scale, security, and all of those things that's in the ICT House of Values. So what we then said is that we did an assessment in what we call our service portfolio, which is basically a very long list of every single ICT service that CETA gets involved in relation to government, and then to look at the entire catalog of services and to say that which of those services does it make more sense to have the capacity in-house, and which of those services are services that can be done by SMEs or other companies, and it makes more sense to do it that way. Now, some of the criteria that we've done is, for example, to say that if something is a recurring service, if you do it for 10 years, then clearly it's something that you need to build in capacity. It doesn't make sense that every 2 years you must renew, go out for tender, renew your contract, get skills, when in fact this is something part of your core business in terms of government IT. So that was some of the examples that we mentioned in determining what we call our capability model. So we actually say that these 10 kind of skills and capability is what we want to build in CETA, and these are the things that we can outsource. And outsource things would be things that you just need once every 2 years, or something that happens so rarely that it doesn't make sense to build a capability and then you sit with a human resource and you can't really use it because it's something that happens occasionally. So I think the short answer to your question is that we do have a capability model. There are certain things that we think that CETA should be doing because it's recurring government ICT services, that we need to develop a skills plan around that to be able to say that over the next 3-5 years, what are the skills in government that's required? Whether it is in tax, whether it is for home affairs or whatever, and how does CETA contribute, work with universities and university technologies to be able to build up that skill space. And I think the CEO will also talk about this issue about the skills when she talk about this cancelled contract that you spoke about. But the idea is that we've got a capability model, we know what we want to do and what we can build up, and we will only focus on those areas that it doesn't really make sense for us, or the private sector can do better than us to be able to go forward. Which brings me to the question which Honourable Member asked about how many vacancies we have. Of course we have vacancies. And part of the reason why we have not filled those vacancies, what we've done is to have a year-by-year contract extension that was from since April last year, was because we also, as we look at the strategic repositioning of CETA, we're also looking at an organizational design, because organization must follow strategy. we're in the process of concluding that, and therefore, once we've started the placement, because members who are involved in these issues, and especially from the unions, realize that it's a very dicey period, that we have to negotiate with staff around it, etc., etc. But once that is completed, we will then be able to say that this is the capability that we have in CETA at the moment, and this is the capability that we can't find in the organization. We must either build it or we must recruit from outside. And I think the reality is that for a state agency, we have to contribute towards the skill pool in the country. We can't expect ready-made projects. There are certain things that, yes, we must go to the market and recruit. But other sectors, there are kids that have graduated in ICT as a not employed. And as an agency, we should play a role to make sure that we develop those skills. So that's the one part of it. The question about contractors and SAPs and the 4.1% and the 7%, the board on an annual basis have discussions about increases, so whether it's the cost of living increases or whether it's bonuses. And we usually take that decision based on increases that have happened over a three-year period to be able to look at, so that you don't, so that you also keep cap of your expenditure on personnel over a period and not just do it in 1 year. And that was in the context in which the decision was taken about 4.1%. I think the permanent employees, if I'm by CEO, was 5.5%. We looked at the previous years. We looked at the financial situation of the agency, because there are certain functions that we have to cross-subsidize. So we don't charge any money for procurement, but it's a very labor-intensive activity that CETA has to engage in. We have to make sure that we invest in infrastructure over the next 2 to 5 years, because I think that the issues about making sure that we are ahead of the trend, etc., is part of that. So that was the basis on which the decision was taken back. The question about innovation, I think the member is completely correct. We started from a situation in 2009, 2010, when we spent less than 0.2% on research and innovation. We've now, in this financial year, we've increased it to 2%. I think it's a bit difficult to immediately from 0.2% go to 5%, because you know that you build up expenditure. We've got specific projects that we know that we want that 2% to be spent on, an innovation hub, and a whole range of different other projects. In addition to that, one of the things that we've also done is, as part of our new organizational structure, is we have a specific section headed by an executive that focuses on government solution development. So that if a department comes to CETA, we don't just simply send them back and say, but you need the technical expertise, et cetera, et cetera. But CETA can actually advise government to be able to say that on X application there are these examples in the world, there's these examples internally, and this is what we advise will be the best way to go forward. So yes, the member's correct that 2% is not good enough, but I think that starting from a low base, we're looking at 2% this year. We want to, in the next 2 years, increase that to 5%. And I think another period of 3 years from 0.2% to 5% is I think it's quite a jump in expenditure on innovation and research. And I think that we're certainly committed to making sure that aspect of our work and of the agency work is put in the right position. The member asked the question about prices. Why we're now bringing down the price of systems and why the prices were high in the first place. I think it's one of the things which necessitated the need for a turnaround strategy that was one of the reasons why CETA was formed, was a very simple argument that you have governments, whatever number of departments, needing ICT goods and services. If you have a central procurement agency, you should be able to leverage economies of scale, because instead of buying 5,000 Microsoft licenses, you should be able to negotiate a central one that will bring down the price for all the different departments that are supposed to use that. One of the things that we realize is that hasn't happened over the last couple of years. And therefore, one of the things that we've done since, and I think the program started, if I'm right, CEO, in October last year, September, October last year, was to have a rigorous meeting with all the original equipment manufacturers to be able to say to Microsoft, to IBM, to Cisco, to all of these different companies, and unfortunately a lot of them are foreign, to say to them that this is the vision in terms of what we want to do, that the fact that you have 200 different contracts with 20 different government departments is simply not on anymore. That what we're going to do is to enforce this question of economies of scale. And to be able to, because CETA has a mandate to do that if I look at the list of must services. And then to be able to say that we're going to, on a central base, negotiate these things so that we're able to leverage those things. But I think that one of the things that we have to do, and this is why the engagement with departments is so important, because at the end of the day, you can only leverage economies of scale if we plan. If Department A today come with that we need this application, which is the same as Department B in 6 months' time and Department C in a year's time, we're not able to leverage that economies of scale to be able to say that we've got three departments that want this, and therefore we need to have a substantial discount. So it's also linked to making sure that we also coordinate ICT planning within government with departments and to be able to address that. So I think that I suppose that one of the issues in conclusion then is the purpose of the turnaround strategy is to be able to make sure that CETA does what it's supposed to be doing and set out at its founding mandate, to be able to say that we need to look at the issues of economies of scale so that the cost of ICT to government becomes cheaper, that we need to be able to look at what are the capabilities, ICT, and skills that we need, so that whether it's tax, whether it's home affairs, whether it's the Department of Health or Education, that we actually are able to, on those things that are recurring ICT services within government, that we're able to provide those skills. Who shall we start with? Okay, the CEO will start with some of the technical questions that members have asked. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I will just be dealing with a couple of issues. And I think that, let me start with the most difficult and controversial one, Chairperson, which is the one that you raised in relation, you know, to PKM and the letter that we actually sent, you know, from CETA. And I think that just given my past experience of, you know, having attended my first induction at, you know, this committee, one actually needs to, you know, to preface one's, you know, presentation with a view of ensuring that we establish a good foundation to lay this matter to rest. The first thing, Chairperson, is that the PICA matter, what we would request is we would request the Chairperson's indulgence in relation to the PICA matter. The information that we had sent through by ourselves as CETA was not actually a joint submission between ourselves and SEPS, and we are actually seeking, which was an oversight on our part, and we would want to seek to avoid a situation of finger pointing between ourselves and SEPS, but also to ensure that we actually present, you know, the facts as they are to the portfolio committee. So our humble request is, because of the fact that we've invested quite a lot in terms of building a partnership between ourselves and SEPS, and building a good, you know, productive relationship between ourselves, you know, and SEPS, the fact that we didn't actually discuss the contents of our submission to the portfolio committee could lead, you know, to a difficult moment in our relationship, and hence the request that we actually seek an indulgence from yourself for us to be allowed to discuss with SEPS the submission that we've made, and for us to do a joint submission within 10 days from today.
On the point of order, if the submission was approved, I don't see the problem. And really, with due respect, you know, I get uncomfortable when I hear we want to do it in conjunction with SEPS.
the question was raised, was asked to yourselves, and that's why the Jefferson raised it again. We don't see a problem with you ourselves answering without SAPS agreeing to the answer. You know, it's like when we call provincial commissioners to Parliament, and they come here, everybody with exactly the same presentation that was prepared for them at national office. That defeats the purpose of the object. If the submission as you have submitted it to the committee is correct, then the, I don't see the need to. You might rule me out of order, but I really don't see the need.
We have no problem to get communication or reports from Peter. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. And it would be a very unfortunate thing where staff would want Peter or Peter would want staff to send any information yet on the basis that they are waiting some relationship. We want to. And the information that we get, because we continue to ask the questions about people, because we're not operating from a blank slate. We also have our information. And this is, which is here, is the truth. And I don't know how we're going to change the truth, because this information is here with us. And that must explain to us as to what is this? This effect that the department signed this theft, and somebody signed it later, and somebody signed and put in brackets sick leave. This is a fact. You can't change it because we have the contract. We've seen it. It's there. How do you change it? And why a person would, from that or whoever, would put in brackets that sick leave? What is that supposed to mean? And we've been asking this question from SAP continuously, and we continue to get these answers. And it would seem like, as a matter of fact, sir, let me tell you, General Shabalala, in this meeting, himself in the presence of General Spence, said the contractor got an unfair advantage. In fact, he had an unfair advantage. That's what he said. What is it that you're going to change? So I understand what you say. However, we are happy to hear the truth. Because I think what is in here, there's nothing but the truth.
Alright, thanks, Jefferson. Just to deal with some of the other matters that have been raised, the issue around tender delays, we have spent quite a lot of energy within the organization around dealing with the tender backlogs that we have. And in specific reference to the tender backlogs work steps, there's just two that we are in the process of dealing with steps. One, we've received information that it has to be, it's likely to be cancelled. The second one is actually in the process of adjudication. But just to indicate that the issue around the tender adjudications and procurement has actually been a challenge within the organization. And what we've done is to reorganize our procurement section and to staff it appropriately. And we are basically reaping some of the benefits of the investment that we've made in terms of the presentation that the chairperson made, you know, earlier on. There are improvements in relation to the turnaround times in as far as some of the requests for bids are concerned, some of the requests for qualifications. In fact, in relation to requests for qualifications, we don't have any backlogs whatsoever. So that's an area that we are giving quite a lot of, you know, attention to. In relation to the pricing that has been also asked and responded to partly by the chairperson, and more details which will be provided by the chief operating officer, just to indicate that we are presently actually sitting with a revised tariff proposal that is due to follow that is supposed to follow due processes of submission to the Ministry for National Treasury and our ministry, and once that has been actually approved, we will then be able to indicate and discuss with the different stakeholders as to what the implications of those particular tariff proposals are. But we believe that the way they've basically been structured will actually result in some, you know, significant cost savings, and we would be prepared to come and brief the portfolio committee as to progress, particularly in relation to the pricing and costing model that we've actually adopted and the implementation thereof. Thanks. Thank you.
contracts that have been cancelled, and what the status is and what has really been the cause of grievance, and unpack a little bit more. With regard to the CCTV tender that was cancelled earlier in the year, the reason for that was that it was really not aligned to the technology strategy that SAPS was busy with at that particular stage. So there was a view that that particular tender needs to be recalled so that it is aligned to the technology roadmap of SAPS. With regard to the detention management, the biggest challenge we had there was from a technical perspective. When the technical evaluation was done, in terms of the mandatory requirements, we could not find any suitable service providers, and therefore the recommendation was that we rather re-evaluate or we cancel that particular center, and that advice is positive. The view that has been taken is probably to reissue and just make sure that the technical part, the technical specification is much more robust in talking to the current technologies that are out there with regards to detention management. The other question that was raised was around the IT skills tender, which is tender 569 that was raised by an honourable member. The issue really there that people took a position on was the biggest challenge we had around 569 was that it was quite a costly approach to have with regard to services. Our view at CJ is that our services, our solutions need to be more service orientated in terms of the development that is done by our service providers as opposed to being resource-based. So the resource approach becomes quite costly and is not talking to our pricing methodology and approach that CJ wants to implement moving forward. So that's the view that was taken around 569. However, 569 talks to another contract, which is contract 570, which is the services-oriented tender. And most departments still have access to make use of 570 because it's a transferable contract. But the view that CETA has is that we should go with CETA preferably because we still have the IT acumen that we can provide to some of the solutions that are out there in terms of providing advisory services and related capability and consulting services. But as I said, 569 is also 570 as well, so there's still a vehicle available to all departments to make use of 570. But with regard to SAP specifically, there's still engagement that we have with them through our SLAR processes so that we can try and support them with some of the projects that they're busy with at the moment so that they don't miss out on their timeline. Then there was another question raised with regard to the costing of specifications versus then participating in the tender down the line. All specifications are done in-house by CETA, so we don't rely heavily on external resources. And once we publish the tender, there's no prejudice that is imposed to any of the industry players to participate in the process. However, where you find, which is really few and far in between, where you find that the industry participates in the technical evaluation, it's always a procedure that if you participate in the technical evaluation, you may then not participate in the bidding process. It's a standard practice within the FDM environment. But as I said, within CETA, our precept states that we should rather do the technical evaluation, we should rather do the technical specification development within CETA and then publish the tender based on specs developed in house.
Thank you, Chaplin, and honourable members. I'll just deal with some few issues that have been left from the colleagues. Maybe let me start around contract 569. The four resources that you spoke about that those contracts were continuously being renewed were on the same contract 569. And the challenge, as you have mentioned, is why it's so expensive is because you then, instead of recruiting a person and getting them there, you get them as contractors and they do not have specific deliverables. So you see they don't know what they're delivering. Well, that's 570, it's service-based, it gives you milestones and deliverables. So when you get a service provider in, you say, you are here to clean this bottle, and they'll clean the bottle and finish that and it's done. And then you have another milestone. Whereas in 569, you just have that person coming and say, as and when I need you, I'll touch you. And it became a very expensive enterprise. With respect to the four contractors exactly, we have started an engagement with SOPs in terms of getting them out of the SOPs environment. There are issues, given that they've been there for long, for a period of 10 years, you have to accept that there is external memory that they sit with, and also intellectual property of government. So you need a process of getting that transferred to the relevant people within CICA, and also the proper handover as you introduce other people to take over. And we started that process in full cooperation with SOPs in addressing that issue. On the next issue that was raised, there was an allegation that our web design team has 7 project managers and only one technical person. We have a manager of that web design team and 6 analyst programmers and 4 programmers. That's what we have in that team. The other issue that was raised that has not been covered by the acting chairperson and the CEO and my colleague is the issue around the ISMS. The ISMS is done as a solution for government. What it does, it covers mostly your generic requirements. So all departments with standard requirements will fit in there. But you have to accept that there are departments with unique requirements that they will do, they will have some differences. I'll give an example. Currently, we've got the Department of Defense that has unique requirements. I want to use the procurement module and the asset management module. Because of the nature of the assets that we keep, and because if you build it for them individually and provide it for everybody, it becomes an expensive exercise. So in that space, you allow them to have a system that is that can be customized and integrated with the ISMS to look for the project from one end. When you see it, when the ISMS is fully deployed, you will not realize that there are the in defense, I think it's Calamis and Oasis that will be operating at the back. You see only the front end of the ISMS, but there's integrated back. There was the other ones with the ships, the naval, and the air force. Similarly, the staff may have, given the nature of the assets that they're making, they may have a difference. That's why they've asked to be the last one. So they want to see whether the scope of the ISMS will cover their full requirements, because they participated in the development of the requirements, but we had to, as government, we had to settle on what would cover majority of the people. Those with unique requirements will be customized. How are we dealing with departments with specifically unique requirements? What we have done, we've developed a common application architecture of government to allow the integration. So when anybody who comes and they have to customize, they'll customize and conform to that common application architecture to allow integration and interoperability of systems and convergence as they go forward. And there's a process in terms of approval to develop systems that are competing with the ISMS. The cabinet has to get approval. You have to apply through the National Treasury to say that you have unique requirements or is it covered within the ISMS scope, or can the ISMS scope be extended as part of the change request to cover your scope if it would be applicable to majority of government departments. And that's the exercise that people have to go through.
Thank you.
The other issue that was raised is the issue around REMAS. The Honourable Member said the fact that we have stopped the implementation of REMAS. We don't have a source code. We don't a number of issues. Yes, we had a bit of challenges around REMAS, but we are working to address that. We are resolving the problems around REMAS for its full implementation. The source code resides with us. We've got that. We are supposed to use Oracle to stay on an Oracle platform, and we are already using Oracle to do the implementation and to say how to resolve, and we work closely with staff to make sure that it is finalized and implemented. Thank you.
Thank you.
point that they need to give us information on how you are saying, so that we can ask you those questions here in the meeting and that we can show that you continue to see. So that is why I have no remorse for them leaving or not leaving. And I'm saying that from, you know, yeah, I remember doing that. In this country, we've been made to believe that DNA backlog is something we can never correct. Something that we've lived in South Africa forever. It took the change of a pattern that today we don't have backlog in biology, FSM. Changing the pattern, we don't have that. But we, every day, as the portfolio committee, had to ask staff as to why we are not addressing that law when it was created and manufactured by people to ensure that we continue to proceed to the same. So I don't have a problem with them. I mean, this is very different. No, this is the way that 10 years for this contract renewed, no improvement, talking about turnaround strategy. I have no reason not to say and I want to move on to that.
Sorry, ma'am. I think that the issue that you raised is valid. I think that one of the approaches that we're following is two ways. We by June this year put in place an entire new executive management team because we realized this question that you raised about some of the problems residing within the center. The second issue is that our organizational redesign process is also aimed at addressing those kind of things so that you know what you have in your organization. What are the weaknesses? What are the things that you can move forward with or not? But we've got a Labor Relations Act, and we have to do it in a manner that also respects that process. When I always describe the process of the Peter Turnaround strategy is flying a plane over the Atlantic while fixing the engine. And it's part of the reality that we need to continue scary. We need to continue addressing the challenges as they arise, and I think it's useful, these kind of engagements are useful because it alerts us to the problem. At the same time, taking those hard decisions within the organization, and these thoughts are certainly part of that.
Chris, is your question. You're going to allow them to answer, and then we can ask follow-up.
Thank you.
Sorry, Chen. Just a follow-up.
Now, there was also a question, why do we allow consultants to leave Twitter and then start working on PCAM? The thing is, we only deal with the service provider, like in this case, not Waymark, but who they utilize as their consultants. We do not have their control over them. Then,
that wasn't the question. The question was actually directed to CISO. The question wasn't directed to SAPS. I wanted to know why, how did this happen? And I really think, I'll ask the question when we do, who thinks SAPS is taking us lightly on PQ, even in the way they respond to us?
General Chavalada, we did talk about PCAM. I was just giving the contract, the background information with regard to the contract, whether it was a single contract or a specific contract, but we need to elaborate on this further.
Okay.
Okay. Are you saying it's a single contract? According to, maybe the problem is our interpretation. According to where, I'm giving the background of how it was started. The SAPS requested CISA to get them a service provider. And then CISA advertised the tender. And after they've advertised, then the conference called the signing of the contract is between Waymark and SAPS as represented by them. As represented by Marlene Mayer, General Marlene Mayer.
It's supposed to be how it normally would work. Would normally an IT contract be signed between CISO, SAPS and service cell requirements, and then CISO would advertise, and then there would be a signature. Where normally would the signature lie? With SAPS or with CISO?
There are two procurement processes that we follow with CISA. There's procurement through CISA and procurement by CISA. Because we're a procurement agency, we are mandated to do procurement activities on behalf of a department. So when they provide, when they put a request through to CISA, we then go through a procurement process and then make a recommendation to the accounting officer of that relevant department. Then they may make a choice of whether they would need to make that particular award because procurement is through CISA. Once an award is concluded, then there's a contracting process. The contracting process, you may either refer that back to us as CISA, then we provide that service again, so it's contracting on behalf of the department by CISA, or you may then do the contracting yourself if you have able and capable resources within your SDM environment. So in this particular case, we made the recommendation with regards to the preferred service provider to be awarded. That was then accepted by the accounting officer at the time, and the contracting process was then concluded by the respective department, in this case, being that. I think that's where the clarification needs to be with regards to the program. But the tender advertisement process, the tendering process, that was a process that was handled by CISA together with that. I hope that clarifies in terms of the process. Tendering and contracting.
It clarifies, but it raises more questions. And the more questions it raises, the more I start getting worried. In general, how many of your contracts where you advertise, of the tenant that you advertise on behalf of SAPS, would SAPS themselves be the contractor in the end? How many times will they make use of your service to be the contracting, were you contracting on behalf? And at what point, Jay, that I also need to understand, how about that? You're saying that only after the recommendation was made that the State Department needs to take a decision on whether they do it as the contractor directly, whether they have the capability to sign the contract and they have the capacity to do so directly, or whether they're still using CISA as the contractor, that's doing the contract on their job. I understand we said that in the process of contract process, I understand that. But you say it's only after the tender has been awarded
department need to decide, make that decision, whether they're going to sign the contract themselves or whether CETA is going to sign the contract on their behalf. Is that correct? Or is it advertised? It's part of the tender process, advertised as a SAPS contract versus a SAPS through CETA contract.
When we advertise, we do make reference to the fact that this is a contract, this is a tender for a particular department. So we do make that declaration up front. The issue of contracting is usually a decision that the department would probably take up front because they've got the resources. They don't find out about the resources at later in stage. But remember, and a lot of procurement through CETA, more often than not, is always contracted by the relevant department because they've got the capability with regards to SAS. They need to manage the process thereafter. So that's really how the process usually follows.
Yeah. In fact, I don't think that we would be able to get all answers in this letter. I always want to believe that this is one contract that we need to get because we continue to get different answers from the same people. So we don't know now as to what is happening with Peter. The only thing that we know is that there are issues related to that. The only thing that we know in this meeting is that from some legal purpose, the assignment itself was not what she's supposed to be saying in the meeting in the presence of substance. Probably the absence of it. That you'd expect the people who are signing a contract are probably in one room and so on and so forth. That is what the legal person from supposed in the meeting was sitting behind General Trump. So we don't know as to what is correct and teaching. The only thing that we know is that there are issues that need to be clarified to the first of the policy that we have identified for the issue of teaching. The duplication. Is there any duplication or there is nothing? These open-ended clauses in that contract would seek a way approve them. Clauses that are so open-ended, you just don't know as to what actually is the cause of this contract, I think. Would CETA do it? Why would it be allowed to happen? And that is why I'm asking. Would CETA really allow a contract with such open-ended clauses in it, and CETA continue to regard itself as this entity that must provide IT to the department without any duplication? These value-added items that have nothing to do with IT that are in that contract, should we really regard this as the thing that CETA is capable of doing, but won't such allow it to happen? Let's continue
that. And then the Shabbatana will continue the other questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We will maybe respond in writing around I'm trying to say something. This contract is what? It was awarded in 2008. It was awarded in 2008. And then there was the 18 months negotiations, price negotiations. On the date when they placed orders for forensic science laboratories, they were placing orders. I sent the orders to General Mayor to sign. The contract had already been awarded in 2008, and there was an 18-month period. There is a
Later on, they came up with this
again. It's here. We have copies of the work that has been done. I'm not sure how we compare the teams. Either we take teams and then we take Fika and then we present it to the committee. I'm not sure whether this satisfies the House based on its work. I still believe that in 2008, when this contract was awarded, it was done under ITA. It was probably negotiated by SAP. Yes, that's when SAP negotiated for this 18 months. I'm not so sure whether CETA was involved during the negotiations. No, CETA was not involved during the negotiations, but the contract was agreed in our way. I hope it covers a little bit about it.
Financial year, then we
will not be any change. I think of the questions later on that was asked as to whether are any projects that have been stopped or taken away from CIPA. The answer to that is no, there are none, and for this financial year there will be none. In fact, in the next financial year, that is the strategy for the CIPA. And I can quickly mention that CIPA is working on a cloud computing strategy, server virtualization and remote infrastructure management, which we want to drive themselves. So our intention is to really assist CIPA in its turnaround and going forward. So the service level agreement will be signed, and our role is really to help the turnaround strategy of CIPA and not disadvantage CIPA. Cancellation of tenders. There are really two tenders that we ask CIPA to cancel, and that is because they had come and stuck anyway. CIPA came back to us and said, this particular tender, that was the CCTV tender, and the specialized equipment for port of entry, and two others. So they were asking if these tenders are still in line with our strategy. So the two tenders, we asked them not to continue with because we wanted to review the specification. The other two, we asked them to continue. That is the motor vehicle project and the detection management. So those two are continuing. It is quite unfortunate that tenders do get cancelled. We believe that as far as we have lost companies out there that are saying, why should we bid for such tenders once they get covered? And that has been a bone of contention between us and CIPA. And I'm happy to say that we are really addressing those issues.
So it's the motor vehicle project?
Yes, this is the long acronym IMPTCF. on floor the person after, obviously it is a problem, but we are hoping to have an integrated solution on one desktop that the occupant can actually utilize to send all the information that goes into the document. We did a presentation recently of the demo of the system to our management, and we are quite positive down the line. I'm happy to say that we believe that we'll be able to roll out the project by December. There was a question on APHIS. There was also a comment by one of the honorable members about the fact that our presentation was a bit maybe misleading. The committee. I need to apologize on that. We do not take the presentation very tightly at all. It was not intended to mislead. We do have a lot of detail. The question is always how detailed do you want to go on the presentation? We can give quite a detailed report on each one of the projects. On the APHIS, for instance, if I can just go through the information I have, we do have APHIS at Home Affairs, which is the national database, and we have our APHIS, which is really a criminal database. We also have a subset of that, which is the most wanted criminal database. Now, the currently there is a project that has been funded through SEPS.
You are protected.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
I'm not sure about that one.
Okay, the current project at CJS is really to enable interface to the Home Affairs. Now, again, without going into too much detail, the way APHIS system works is you store an image of a fingerprint as well as the minutia. Now, the minutia is a calculation based on an algorithm of the fingerprint, so that, and it's a very, very fast access method. Now, different vendors use different algorithms. They all provide. Home Affairs uses the APHIS, the NEC APHIS, which is probably one of the top three in the world. We use a different technology. So for us to interface between the two, there must be an interface. We said instead of using the minutia from one system to another, you use the image, and then when you interface to the system, you then convert the image to minutia and get the response. But you do not store images in both systems. So in some cases, only the minutia exists, not the image, which means they have to convert the minutia back to images. So the project that our client is doing with is to upgrade the Home Affairs APIs so that it stores all images in such a way that you can access even the fingerprint image and be able to convert it to the minutia. So it is quite an important project.
Can we get the same time frame? And I'm asking this question here because we were processing the criminal law, forensic procedures, and even being on fingerprints with the principal. The department came and made the presentation. And the presentation might actually not be talking to what you are now saying. That's the issue. That would be helpful. We had a presentation from the department of when you're presenting that content and everything. And that is why you went ahead and adopt that bit, and today it is an end.
Thank you.
attended meetings with the department, this one in Congress, blah, blah, blah. And therefore, on the basis of the agreement, I had an approved and adopted and processed that. That is what I'm saying, to say that the problem would be in the presentation made today for this purpose, and another one made tomorrow for another purpose, but talking to one thing, different language. Then you sit and listen to the same department telling you different things. That becomes a challenge. And the presentation that you're making, you have no idea how interesting it is to ask that member. Because really you want to know whether going to police stations down there, are they in, let alone the fact that they're not aware of this thing, some people actually. But it is easy to can keep the internet to them. Subset and yes. Immediately, that's what they said. They said immediately, the Department of South African Police Service said it to us, it's militant, it's in power. That's what they said.
Thank you, Madam. I can say that an amount of 132 million has been allocated to this project. We have identified the requirements that we need to be done on the Home Affairs system. So we've got the information quite detailed on it. So this is from the Commissioner report. There was also a question on the as to why we buy tools when we can't roll out without the relevant training. I think it's an interesting question that we really need to clarify. Within our environment, that's the IT or technology environment, we obviously, when you buy specialized equipment, there are these times for procurement, times when you must make sure that you have the equipment. And also, if you are going to buy, create a development environment as well as a testing environment, environment must be the same. So that's why we tend to buy a lot more equipment than is envisaged as needed. But in this particular case, I don't know if you want to have this issue. Which the first two have been completed. The first two that have been completed are the
Moko Church, we bought an additional 1,000 recently for 1.5 redemption. But if they break, we fix those that we can fix and we dispose of those that we cannot fix. So Moko Church is still very much a piece of equipment that we rely on.
And to add on that, Madam Chair, we are looking at a very innovative solution again. We have published, we had put together a certification for a kind of open seminar devices. We are currently evaluating a solution that uses the BlackBerry from Vodacom. It's a very, very innovative solution, and I think once we have the prototype,
use it for national key points. we use it to take the particulars of the VIP. When we travel, the summary of the plan is incorporated into the
question.
And
the point is there's no technical support for the system. So if the system collapses, what then? That's the point.
Thanks. We've got the resource. It's true, we lost the resource in January. We finally managed to get a resource who can use familiar with the system. And then we assisted to support it to stabilize it, and we are ready to say, and other extensions that we have to do in the first quarter of now, next year, we will still be able to. We are implementing the ease resources to support remote now. We had a problem in January when we lost the resource, but we have the resource in place now. Thank you.
Some of you will have in the dangers of Twitter, however,
what is in this budget is one port summit. One Pulker has in budget is 3.6 billion. We want to see this thing in the police station when we go to the police station, and that is why we're asking for the list of the police station that we have identified, because we want to go to the police station and we want to see this in excess level, not here in the meeting, but in the police station. We visited one police station in Bloemfontein last week. I think it's supposed to be there, Bloemfontein Central, I don't know if it's whatever police station. They said to us they received whether it's 24 computers last year, but they've not used them until today. Only now that the CETA has come to put in place the infrastructure, that they therefore think they will start using those computers. They received them in 2010. And these are the things that we continue to pick up when we deal with police. It's supposed to be the central police, the central police station, but I think it's half old here, it's half old. That's what they told us. Now we're talking about the big police station. If you go into this for another one, then it's the same as mentioned. 3.6 billion that has got to solve some of the problems for this year. And of course it can go this far, but at least we must see where they get started. That is what I said to one of the pillars in the Bloomsbury police station. There are two pillars, not a single road is clean, and I said to him, show me where you have cleaned, and then say I could not proceed to clean this room because I'm alone. But show me where, just the one room that you've cleaned since this morning and still this afternoon. But you could. And the police station is just not that perfect. Everything up in the police station, I'm asthmatic, I forget that I'm asthmatic, I'm in this room today. I've not used my spray, I've not used it for the whole week, for the whole month, or not for the whole year. I can use it in the police station, the way I use it. And these are the things that we look for. Talk to what you can contribute. It is nothing. Thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you very much, members. Thank you very much.